Pennsylvania. Now, one of the star attractions for that part of Pennsylvania is back here now, as far as I'm concerned, you know, James and Lisa. So I don't know that I'll get over that way as much anymore. But it's really worth seeing. So I highly recommend it. And they've got a little presentation. Best I can determine, it's accurate. And, you know, there's a lot of details here in Exodus. And, you know, they fit the details pretty good. In Exodus 27, the first detail that we're looking at here is the altar. The altar of burnt offering. And the first question says to describe the altar and what was it to be used for. Any takers? Yeah, Bill?
3 cubits high, 5 cubits long, 5 cubits wide. It had a horn on each corner, overlaid with bronze.
Okay, very good. Like all things in the tabernacle, it was built according to the pattern. And Mo talked some Wednesday night about patterns and how we see that repeatedly in the scriptures. And this is another example of that. If you look at verse 8 of chapter 27 in Exodus, the last part, as it was shown to you in the mountain, so they shall make it. So, they didn't just come up with this on their own. God was very specific as to how he wanted it made. And you might ask, why does that matter? To me, the answer is, when you look at all these specifics in the Old Testament that they had to follow, that teaches us that God expects us to follow specifics. And there's lots of specifics in the New Testament that we need to follow as well. And I really think that's one of the pretty significant differences between the church and the denominational world, is those specifics. Some of the generalities are fairly similar. I mean, we believe in God, we believe in Jesus, but you get into the specifics. And so many in the denominational world care nothing about that. But what we can learn from the Old Testament is those specifics are important and need to be followed. And I think we can take that and learn from that for us in the New Testament. The altar was placed in the area called the court of the tabernacle, which was kind of a big open area, or more open. The tabernacle had these curtains all the way around the court. And, you know, we'll get into some of those specifics a little later. And then inside the court was another tent-like structure where the holy place and the most holy place, or the Holy of Holies, was. And, you know, we've already looked at some things that were in there, things like the table of showbread we've looked at previously. The Ark of the Covenant with the mercy seat was inside the most holy place. But then outside of that tent-like structure is this big court, and the altar of burnt offering was in that court between the entrance and the structure where the holy place and most holy place was. So it was outside, open to the heavens. Pretty much all of the animal sacrifices were made on this altar. There was an exception where the once a year sacrifice made by the high priest was made at the altar of incense. But otherwise, the sacrifices, and there were lots and lots of sacrifices, you know, far more than I think we tend to realize. I mean, they had many daily sacrifices that were made at this altar. But having it where, when you first enter the court of the tabernacle, pretty much the first thing you see is this altar. I don't think that's an accident. I think that's pretty significant. It reminded all of their need for forgiveness, because this was the altar for sacrifices that were made for their sins. And isn't that the first need that we all have? Because we're all sinners. And they were back then, too. And so to be reminded when you first walk in, oh, there's this altar. And there's sacrifices all offered on this altar because I'm a sinner. That's important. All Israel would see that and be reminded when they went in. The priests on their way to the sanctuary, to the holy place, would see that and be reminded that they're sinners as well. And be reminded of the forgiveness that God offers through His mercy and grace. And you know, we need that reminder too. It's only through God's mercy and grace that we have any hope of salvation. Because every one of us is a sinner. And it's not about how good we are. Because once we sin, we can't stack up enough good things to take away that sin. It's only through the sacrifice that God provided that we contact when we're obedient. When we're baptized into the blood of Christ, it's only through that grace and mercy that we can be forgiven. Yes, Amy?
Well, I think He did the very same thing for us when He set up the Lord's Supper on a weekly basis, so that every people, hopefully, we're all reminded when we partake in that, just like them, and the need for the sacrifice of them, we needed that sacrifice, and we need that continual forgiveness.
Yep. Yep, excellent point. Okay. God had previously commanded that there be an altar back in Exodus chapter 20. And, you know, we looked at that at the time. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 24, it says, you know, "You shall make an altar of earth for me, and you shall sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen. Every place where I cause my name to be remembered, I will come to you and bless you." So, commanded that it be an altar of earth. Maybe to remind man of where he came from. Man was made of earth, the dust of the ground. So, perhaps that was the reason. But when you look at the description of this altar, you find a lot of things that aren't just earth. Does that strike anybody? Anybody have any ideas what the explanation might be to kind of reconcile the two? Yeah, Chris?
It's hard to move an earth and altar, whereas this thing can become.
Okay. What this really was, and the description that Bill gave us, might be more accurately described as an altered case. It's square, you know, a cube, although it is not as tall as it is wide. And so technically that's not a cube. There's some other term for it that escapes me at the moment. But it made the outsides, but was hollow inside. It was made of wood covered with bronze. The covering of bronze would be important because there was a lot of fire going on the altar, and so if you just had the wood would be consumed. But the bronze covering would not be, and so it protected the wood. It did have four horns, as Bill described, one at each corner. Horns were typically symbols of power, protection, and help. And I think it also included, you know, glory and salvation that were indicated there as well. Then it talks about some pans or pails that would receive the ashes. Because when you burn an animal, you know, there's ashes as well as a lot of fat that got mixed in. And so that had to be removed through the pails. And there are also shovels described there to move the ashes from the altar to the pans. And then a basin to receive the blood from the sacrifice. There's also flesh hooks described here, or forks, which would be used to arrange the various cut-up pieces, and also would be used for the priests. Anybody know what the priests specifically did with that? So we do find that mentioned elsewhere in the scriptures. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 2. And verses 13 and 14. It says, "And the custom of the priests with the people, when any man was offering a sacrifice, the priest's servants would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand. Then he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. Thus they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there." So the priests would use that. That would become their portion that they would eat. You know, when they thrust the fork in and, you know, whatever, you know, they pull out. Now, some of them abused that. And specifically in that context, it talks about Eli's sons, and they were pretty worthless. And, you know, they would abuse that and would take several passes. But they were only authorized to do that once. There was also fire pans to take the burning coals from this altar to the altar of incense. And we find that in Leviticus chapter 16, verses 12 and 13. Says, "And he shall take a fire pan full of coals of fire from upon the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground sweet incense, and bring it inside the veil. And he shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the ark of the testimony, lest he die." So these fire pans were to be used for that. Now, can you think of anybody that got themselves in trouble with those fire pans?
Well,
Nadab and Abihu in Leviticus chapter 10. And what they did, they took the fire pans. So far, so good. But then they didn't get fire from this altar of burnt offering. We just read that they're supposed to do that. They got it from someplace else. We know what happened to them. God struck them dead. That's pretty picky. Isn't fire fire? That's what we tend to think. But like we started off with, there's a pattern. And the specifics are important. And this is a prime example of, if you don't follow the pattern, there are consequences. And so, I think that's there to show us the consequences of not following that pattern. It might seem insignificant to us, but nothing is insignificant when God has commanded. And we need to keep that in mind. There are no insignificant commandments of God. Okay, then in addition, there were poles made of this acacia wood overlaid with bronze to carry this altar case around. So, basically, you had this case, and they would put earth inside the case so that the altar was of earth. And that's what they would use, you know, where they would have their burnt offerings. But then when they got up and moved, because I mean, the whole purpose of having a tabernacle like this, you know, a tent, something that's portable, because these were people on the move. They were nomadic. So you couldn't just build a building. It's awful hard to pick up a building and move it. So you had this tent. And so this altar was designed to be portable. You're not going to move the earth, but you're going to move the altar case. And then when they set the tabernacle back up in their next location, they could again fill this case with earth and be ready to offer the sacrifices. Okay, any questions, comments about that? Okay, the next section talks about the court of the tabernacle. And question two says, what were the dimensions of the court of the tabernacle and what materials were the sides of it made out of? Yeah, Lance?
Well, just a comment maybe before, okay. I'm sorry, about the altar itself. And we don't read about this until later, but yeah, a couple chapters later. But it sounds like, too, that it's possible because of the priest's garments and what was required to for the trousers to be made, right, that they may have also had some steps to go up over top of that altar.
Yes.
And had clothes, you know, made to cover themselves.
Yes. Yeah. Now, that's right. We will see that. Yeah, good point. Okay, the court of the tabernacle. What are the dimensions of that? Yeah, 100 by 50 cubits, and I'm not going to make you do the math. Even though math's my thing. And then it's also 5 cubits tall. And says, what materials were the sides made out of?
Finely twisted linen.
Okay, fine twisted linen. Do we know what color? For the entrance, yes. And the entrance, there was a gate, there was a screen 20 cubits wide, so that's a big, it's 30 feet. That's a rather wide entrance. And it kind of had a screen that was made of this fine twisted linen that was with, you know, blue, purple, and scarlet. The rest of the sides, I believe, were white. And so there was quite the contrast for the entrance there. So you had these screens of, you know, linen material that go all the way around the perimeter of the court and, you know, form the sides. This court, you know, surrounded the sanctuary, the holy place and the most holy place. Some think, you know, to symbolize protecting that from the outside world. I mean, from outside, you couldn't see the sanctuary for the screen that was around the court of the tabernacle. Only Israelites could enter the court. You know, Gentiles couldn't. But all Israelites could enter the court. Only priests could enter the sanctuary or the holy place. And only the high priest could enter the most holy place, the Holy of Holies. And that only once a year. So, it's like the further in you go, the more restrictive it becomes. And some think that the white walls of the court, you know, white's typically a symbol of purity. And so there's some speculation as to that being the reason why they were white. Okay, question three talks about the, it says, what were they to use for fuel for the lamp, and how long was it to remain lit? Yeah, Gayla? Okay. Yeah, verse 20 tells us that. You know, pressed olives, or the translation I have says beaten olives. There were a couple different ways to get olive oil, I'm told, back then. One was to press or to beat it by hand. That's what was specified here. The other was to crush the olives in a mill, and you can get olive oil that way. But the method described here produces the best, most clean and pure olive oil, and this oil would burn the cleanest and the brightest when you crushed it in a mill. There would be some impurities that would come in. So only the best was to be used. And it does say to make a lamp burn continually, the end of verse 20. Yeah.
I read several different translations on this. One translation says from evening till morning.
Yeah.
It said continually evening till morning.
Yeah. I read that too. So as long as it was dark out. And that may have been the case. I would not argue that point.
Yeah, because one of another that said when they dressed the lamps.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I will not argue that point at all. That could well be true. Okay. Then we get into chapter 28, and this is what Lance is talking about, the garments of the priests. And Question four says, what position did Aaron hold for Israel? And what materials were used for his garments when he was fulfilling that role? Aaron was the high priest. And the materials used for his garments? Okay. Aaron was pretty well dressed. There were a number of specifics given there. The materials themselves, there was gold, there was fine twisted linen, and there was a bunch of precious stones. So let's get into some of those specifics. But we see the garments are described in great detail. And Aaron and the high priest that succeeded him had to wear these garments when they were coming before God, that they had to be properly adorned. And if they didn't, they would die. Again, some specifics. And that reminds us today we need to be properly adorned spiritually when we come before God. It's a serious matter to be before God, and if we're not taking our life seriously, then God's not going to find our worship acceptable to Him. If we live a wicked life 6 days a week, and then come to worship on Sunday, that's not going to cut it. Scriptures are very plain about that. In verse 2 of chapter 28, it says, you shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother, for glory and for beauty. The high priest was a special servant of God, a special position. And God is totally worthy of all glory and praise. So, the glory part there in verse 2. But then, for beauty, this beauty should remind us of God who created this beautiful earth. And certainly, when you look at the earth, you look at the creation, it's beautiful. There's a lot of beautiful stuff. We get used to it, so we tend to take it for granted. At least till we travel someplace that we're not used to being. And then, some things can really strike us. You know, things like, you know, the Grand Canyon. Yeah, that's the example most people use. And I mean, that's spectacular. I'll give you that. Sure, we've all seen pictures. Many of us have seen it. But I can also tell you there's a lot of other spectacular stuff in God's creation. And I've seen some things like that. I was in Canyonlands National Park in Utah one time. And overheard two guys walking by me. They were talking. And one of them commented, this is just like the Grand Canyon, without the crowds. That was a very apt description. It wasn't as big as the Grand Canyon, but it was beautiful. And there were hardly any people around. So that was... That one stuck with me. Then the specifics, you know, Charles gave us several specific garments, and he was correct. There was an ephod. It had two onyx stones on which were engraved the names of the 12 sons of Israel. You know, six on one stone that was on one shoulder and six on the other. And then there was a breastplate, and it had 12 precious stones, each one engraved with the name of one of the sons of Israel, sons of Jacob. And the breastplate over the chest, close to the heart, I think there's probably some significance there. The stones are named, from what I read, and I think this is probably true, some of our translations are probably off. One that kind of stuck out to me, mentioned in there, is a diamond. How are you going to engrave on a diamond somebody's name? Especially back then, they didn't have the engraving tools that we have today. So, seriously doubt that that was a diamond. But from what I read, there were some alternatives. So I think it's a translation issue. And it's hard for us to know exactly from the Hebrew names, you know, exactly which stones were being talked about. But I bring that up just from the standpoint somebody might bring this up to you at some point in time, saying, well, the Bible's totally inaccurate. And there's some other really hard stones in this list that they probably couldn't have engraved on. And they might bring that up saying, see, the Bible's dead wrong here. There's no way they could have engraved on that. It's just a translation thing. It's hard to get into our language exactly what each of those stones were. But if you do some research, you can it can probably be figured out something that would look similar but would be soft enough to be engraved on. Then there was a robe, all of blue, which is contrasted with the colors, the many colors of the ephod and the breastplate. And it was made with bells, so the high priest could be heard when he enters and exits the holy place. And the Israelites could hear them too. And this robe was obviously important. If you look in verse 35 of chapter 28, it says, and it shall be on Aaron when he ministers, and its tinkling may be heard when he enters and leaves the holy place before the Lord, that he may not die. Not sure why that's there with this specific, but it is. So apparently that was rather important. And then there was a turban, or some translations call it a mitre, something for the head. A turban, I think we all pretty much know what that is. But there was something kind of special about this turban and something that was on it. If you look in verse 36, you shall also make a plate of pure gold and shall engrave on it like the engravings of a seal, holy to the Lord. And you shall fasten it on a blue cord, and it shall be on the turban, and it shall be at the front of the turban. And it shall be on Aaron's forehead, and Aaron shall take away the iniquity of the holy things which the sons of Israel consecrate with regard to all their holy gifts, and it shall always be on his forehead, that they may be accepted before the Lord. So, you've got this turban, but I'm sure when you look at the high priest, one thing that would really stand out to you is this plate on the front of pure gold. You know, pure gold tends to stand out. And engraved on the plate are the words holy to the Lord. That's really significant. We need to think of worship in that way. It's holy to the Lord. So, whenever they'd see the high priest dressed in these robes, that their attention would be drawn to that. They would be reminded of what it was that they were there for. Then in verse 39, it talks about a coat or a tunic with a girded belt, kind of a sash. And so that's the garments for the high priest. So almost the entire chapter is taken up with details about those garments. And then the last four verses, the garments for Aaron's sons, the priests. They also had tunics and sashes. And then it talks about what Lance mentioned earlier in verses 42 and 43. It says, "And you shall make for them linen breeches to cover their bare flesh. They shall reach from the loins even to the thighs. And they shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they enter the tent of meeting or when they approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they do not incur guilt and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and to his descendants after him." And as Lance mentioned, there is, in other places, indication that there were some steps going up to the altar. And so these linen breeches would cover, the underside of those garments, so that, as they're up above the people, nobody could see things that they shouldn't see. And so it did take care of that as well. And again, it mentions it's important that they wear these, that they do not incur guilt and die. So, okay, any questions, comments about any of that? So we're just about out of time. Yeah, Lisa.
As far as what stones they were and how they engraved on them, chapter 28, verse 3 says that God filled them with the spirit of steel. Okay. Whatever, if it was a diamond, he told them how to do it.
Yeah.
So, whatever the stones were, they did what they had to do.
Okay.
Diamonds got diamond rules.
Yeah.
So, if they had
other diamonds, they could. Okay. Okay, anything else? Charles?
Yeah, I think when you look at both these chapters, you see how the priests were to approach